you caught me off guard here coming on like that. I had to take my vitamin D supplement because walking in here, did you see how gloomy it was, Mike?
Yeah, it's looking like a winter wonderland out there.
Yeah, it is looking like a winter wonderland. It was snowing. And driving down 75, I saw so many cars spinning out and hitting the median. So if you're driving out there, be very, very careful because it's 25 degrees and it feels like, they say, 13 degrees.
I don't know if I was zoning out during the weather report this morning, but I feel like the snow kind of came out of nowhere.
Aren't you normally zoning out?
Yeah. Well, especially when you're in. Hey, now.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Where's that? Here we go.
There we go.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. Listen, it is cold and it is gloomy, so I'm going to tell everybody, take your vitamin D. We want to make sure that you're healthy throughout the season because this is the cold and flu season, and it's also the holiday season, and you don't want to miss any parties or family gatherings unless you have a family like Mike Parsons, right?
Wow. Also, you don't want to catch anything at those family gatherings if you have someone like Rocky in your family.
That's right. That's right. You don't want to catch Americanism or patriotism, those diseases. Yes. Well, it's great to fill in for Paul W. Smith on Focus. I really enjoy doing this, especially during the holiday season, because there's a little bit of something when you walk into the Fisher Building that is just amazing.
Yeah, you're thinking of the Christmas trees, probably.
And the menorah. They had the menorah. They had the Christmas trees. And it's all decorated. It's beautiful.
It reminds me of Home Alone 2.
Yeah, except President Trump's not in the
right.
Not in the aisle.
He's not pointing me to, I forget where he was looking for, but yeah.
Yeah, you know, talking a little bit about President Trump, I'm here joined today with my favorite dear friend, Krish Methrani, who happens to be the vice chair of the Michigan GOP. He's joining me today,
watching me,
kind of walking around today, and he's in studio today. Krish,
yeah,
you want to say hello?
Thanks for having me on.
Well, that's about it. Okay, thank you. No, we're going to hear from Krish a little bit later on. We're going to talk a little bit politics.
Now, Rocky, you told me that he was your intern, but if he's youth chair of the Michigan GOP, I'm wondering why you're not interning for him.
That didn't deserve a rim shot. Who did that?
I don't. You're the only one with the button.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, I hit it.
Yeah.
How about that?
I'll show you how to use that one day.
Thank you very much. No, Krish Methrani is a great young man, and we're going to talk a little bit of politics with him in the second hour. But, you know, talking about President Trump, do you remember that time when he sat down with the incoming New York Mayor Mamdani?
Yeah, and I think that was the same day that Marjorie Taylor Greene kind of left MAGA. It's sort of like, I didn't see that trade coming where,
wasn't on my bingo card either.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, Trump and Mamdani are like best friends. It's kind of like you and me, Rocky.
Yeah. What about us being good friends?
Well, yeah. You know, we're kind of opposite sides ideologically I don't know. It's hard to be as conservative as you, but, you know, you and I have our differences, but we still get along very well.
Yeah.
And it's all, I think.
Okay. Anyway.
It's all about getting in a room together, right?
That's right. And as I was trying to get to my point before I was so kindly interrupted, New York incoming mayor, Mamdani, did you see his ICE video? He put out an ICE video where he basically released the video to talk about individual rights when dealing with ICE and then proposed to spend an additional, and the city of New York's in a little bit of financial trouble, but he's spending an additional $165 million on defense lawyers. Did you see that? Here's a cut of what his video sounded like.
Last weekend, ICE attempted to raid Canal Street and detain our immigrant families.
Know your rights.
If you encounter ICE, these are the things that every New Yorker should know. First, ICE cannot enter into private spaces like your home, school, or a private area of your workplace without a judicial warrant signed by a judge. ICE is legally allowed to lie to you, but you have the right to remain silent.
Well, now, Mamdani, if you think he just topped it on that one, he just appointed a criminal with a long rap sheet of armed robbery of taxi cabs in the city of New York to sit on his city safety and crime board. Can you believe that, Mike?
Say that again, Rock.
So Mamdani, the incoming mayor of New York, appointed a criminal with a long rap sheet and multiple armed robberies of taxi cabs in the city of New York to sit on his city safety and crime board.
Wow. Well, maybe as a criminal, he knows what to do about criminals. I don't know. That's kind of wild.
Yeah, it is wild. I think this guy's out of control already. I was never a fan, and we talked a little bit about President Trump having him at the White House, and that was really a warm meeting. But if you really consider this guy to be the next David Dinkins of the city of New York, what are we doing? What are we doing? And, you know, furthermore, we talk a little bit about Jasmine Crockett. Did you see she basically announced that she's running for U.S. Senate in Texas?
Yeah, and I was hoping she was running against Ted Cruz because that would have been a heck of a matchup. But
no, that's going to be the Cornyn seat. Cornyn, and by the way, Senator Cornyn right now in Texas has his hands full because he had the Attorney General Paxton running against him already, and Paxton got involved in an affair, and he was going to be impeached by the Republicans in the government in Texas, in the state government. And then suddenly, out of the blue, so Paxton didn't step out of the race. He's still running against Cornyn, the incumbent, who's a Republican. And now you've got Wesley Hunt, the West Point graduate, and also from the House of Representatives, running against Cornyn and Paxton in the primary. And it looks like President Trump may actually support Wesley Hunt. So Crockett puts out a campaign ad because she truly believes, I think misguidedly, that she's going to win Texas. And here's the campaign ad. It's all about Trump.
How about this new one they have? Their new star, Crockett. How about her?
She's the new star of the Democrat Party, Jasmine Crockett. They're in big trouble.
But you have this woman, Crockett. She's a very low IQ person.
I watched her speak the other day. She's definitely a low IQ person.
Crockett. Oh, man. Oh, man.
She's a very low IQ person.
Somebody said the other day, she's one of the leaders of the party. I said, you got to be kidding.
Well,
now they're going to rely on Crockett. Crockett's going to bring them back.
And all this is being played in this 30-second commercial while you see Jasmine Crockett go from a 45-degree angle in a black and white and look straight in the camera and smile, and at the end says, I'm Jasmine Crockett.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
It's powerful.
Yeah, it is a powerful ad. And, if the midterms are a referendum on Donald Trump, then it's a good strategy. But if it's not, then it's wasted airtime.
Well, I do think that the midterms will be... I've talked with my brother about this, and we disagree, but I do believe that the midterms are going to be a campaign on Donald Trump, but it's also going to be on, do you want turmoil, or do you want the Republicans to control, or do you want just shared power? And historically speaking, we've always had shared power. Well, we're going to have some positive news stories and some news stories to talk a little bit about. Next one is a positive news story. You probably heard about Mr. Bombas, an 88-year-old store clerk that really hit it big. And we'll talk a little bit about this after the messages. This is Rocky Rutschkowski sitting in for Paul W. Smith on Focus. WJR. Well, I promised you a feel-good story, and that's what we have. But I have to start off by saying, and this is just a joke, it's not the opinion of those at WJR, but my personal opinion. You know, we lead up into the Army-Navy week, and this is one of the biggest football games, Army v. Navy, in the history of our United States. And I always say, go Army, beat Navy. There's always that joke about you can join the military and the Navy, but you can only do one or the other. But this is a feel-good story about an Army vet. And we welcome a man whose story is just as powerful as his unassuming presence. Maybe you've recently heard the story or seen it on the internet. His name is Ed Bombas from Livingston County. And Ed is the voice of resilience, passion, and purpose because he's someone who has turned life's toughest moments, you could say, into fuel for something extraordinary. From quiet beginnings to becoming an inspiration for countless people because of the internet, Ed's journey reminds us that every setback can really spark a comeback. Get ready, because in the next few minutes, you're going to go through a little laughter, and you're going to have some feelings, and we're going to see the real Ed Bombas, and you'll get to know him and won't forget him. Ed, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Rocky. I appreciate it very much.
Listen, Ed, what'd you do in the Army, by the way?
I was stationed at Fort Wayne here in Detroit, and for 60 to 66, I helped teach new recruits.
Oh, God bless you. So, you know, Ed, you have become an internet sensation recently. And the story, because of back in the old days of 2008, when the automotive restructuring basically bankrupted General Motors, a lot of General Motors employees and Delphi employees and others that were associated lost their pensions or had their pensions redone and transformed. So can you tell us a little bit about what happened to you?
Okay, sure. Happy to. I started with GM in 59, and in 99, I finally decided to retire. And with that, I received a full pension, including health care, substantial monetary monthly payments, and I also had a substantial life insurance policy. And I had that for between 12 and 13 years. And then I got a letter one day that said I had to go to this meeting in Novi. Jim was presenting some new information. And when I got there, I was given a booklet, at which time I was told that I'm going to be bought out of my current retirement and given a lump sum payment. And I was losing my health care and all but $345 of my pension. And I lost all but $10,000 of my life insurance.
And this all happened in 2008, I assume?
2012.
So, and at this time, you were married and your wife became ill?
My wife has been sick off and on all her life. She's had, was born with a severe case of arthritis from the, and she was in pain constantly, 24 hours a day. She started taking pain medication when she was 30 years old and continued until she passed away at age 81.
So now you're take another job to kind of fulfill your income and to support your wife as she's going through her illness, and you're working a second job after you've retired, after you thought you had this nest egg, and you're working hard, and people are seeing how hard you're working at this Meijer, if I'm not mistaken, correct? It was in Livingston County, and people started sending notes to this internet sensation, this gentleman that does these good things, and they basically heard your story, and they saw your work ethic. Is that how you kind of got noticed?
That's basically it. And it was a two-storied move for me. Yes, I needed income to be able to sustain myself financially, but I also needed to talk to people, mostly my age if possible, because I needed to keep from getting totally depressed at the death of my wife.
Yeah. What year did your wife pass on?
She passed on in 2018.
And the story goes that you visit her every day to at least say hello to her and keep your love alive, right?
I do.
Yeah. Well, Ed, and if I can help you out a little bit, so this story, these people that met you and heard your story, they reached out to this internet guy from, is he from Australia?
Yes, he's from Australia. He comes here periodically, and he helps people that are recommended to him, and some possibly aren't. He, for example, before me, he recently helped a homeless woman on the streets of Minneapolis someplace with a child in a buggy, and raised, I think, about $600,000 for her, bought her a home, and set her up with a good lifestyle again.
Well, he put out your story and how hard you worked and the story about your love for your wife and your family. and what you were promised when you put money aside at General Motors, and his internet website raised you $1.7 million to supplement the pension that was taken from you. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So what part of the story that people don't see, but you wish they really understood?
Understood the fact that I took care of, well, after my wife got really sick, I took care of her, and we sold the house after I lost my pension. I had to sell the house and some things to try and raise some money for us. I had to now go and find health care coverage for her and myself. We moved into a manufactured home, you know, because it was on one level and it was easier for me to take care of her. I basically was there 24 hours a day for her, got between 3 and 5 hours sleep a night for all those 8 to 10 years. And she died of atrial fibrillation. It finally tore her heart apart. And her heartbeat was 240 beats a minute for her.
Yeah, well, Ed, I've got to ask you, because we've got about a minute left. What do you hope that people feel and understand after hearing your story today?
They want to smile.
Oh, we're losing. Well, we're losing Ed. But Ed, what a powerful story, and how the community came together and around Ed. And I guess the real story here is have faith and keep working forward. We're going to have some great guests next. Following up is Craig Mauger from the Detroit News and Steve Mitchell from Mitchell Polling. And they're going to go head-to-head on how the news stories of our politicians are actually polling in the public. And we're going to be able to talk to both of them. So stay tuned. This is Rocky Rutschkowski filling in for Paul W. Smith on WJR. Well, we're going to take a deep dive into the heartbeat of Michigan politics, and we've brought in two of the state's sharpest, as some would say, and most trusted, as some would say, voices to help us make sense of it. First, we have Craig Mauger from the Detroit News. Craig, say hello.
Hey, thanks for having me.
There you go. A journalist known for his cutting through the noise and bringing a little clarity to the stories in Lansing that shape our state. And joining him is veteran pollster Steve Mitchell. Steve, say hello.
It's great to be with both of you.
There you go. Steve's finger has been on Michigan's political pulse for decades, and he really knows how to get down to the issues that face our state and how we feel about it. Together, they're here to help us understand not just what the polls are saying, but what we the people are feeling about the numbers, the narrative, and the emotions behind the state's politics and the upcoming midterms. So, big picture, gentlemen, a starter for both of you. Before we get into the numbers and the stories and the headlines, what's the mood that you're sensing out there? What's the emotional state of the Michigan voters right now as we head into that midterm year?
That's a really good question, and
I wish I could
give you a sharp, concise answer, but I think there's a lot of uncertainty in a lot of people's minds. I mean, we're embarking on a truly massive election year next year, where we're going to have an open seat in the governor's office, an open U.S. Senate seat, attorney general's open, secretary of state's open. Every seat in the legislature is going to be on the ballot, and that is unusual. I mean, we don't have this type of open environment like this in recent elections. We haven't had that. And then on top of that, I mean, what the issue that voters are talking about right now that I'm hearing, and I think the polls that Steve's done point to this, and what everyone's talking about, is affordability. How do you bring down costs for people? That's what voters want. And there's a lot of different issues that play into that: healthcare, electricity, grocery prices. I mean, there are so many different ways you could tackle that issue. I think that's going to be the theme to watch over the next year. How do Republicans and Democrats tackle that? What issues do they focus on, and what resonates with the voters in Michigan ahead of the November election?
Well, Steve, how about you following up? What's the mood of the state?
You know, surprisingly, this the Republicans seem to be doing a little bit better than I would have anticipated, especially what's been happening in the elections around the country, like the twin wins by Democrats in both Virginia and New Jersey. But Craig's absolutely right. The big issue is the economy and inflation. When we asked that on our more recent poll done just in late November, 36% of all voters said that the economy and inflation was the top issue. Among Republicans, 39%, Democrats, 34%, and Independents, 33%. So that's really the big issue right now on the voters' minds. And if President Trump can do something to solve it, then his party will do well. Otherwise, he may face the same problem that every president, Republican or Democrat, has faced in midterms, and that is not to do very well. Only four times since World War II has the party in the White House done well in a midterm election.
Yeah, and Steve, we're going to talk a little bit about that in a second here, but getting into the fact that there's all these tax cuts and potential huge interest rates coming down because Jerome Powell is leaving as the chair of the Fed, and the president will be able to appoint someone a little bit more favorable to interest rate cuts. Craig, let me shift before we get into Steve's numbers on this, but the governor's race, what are you seeing behind the stories of Jocelyn Benson and Mayor Mike Duggan and then the Republican candidates?
You know, that is one of those pieces of the pie for next year that points to the uncertainty. We have not had an independent candidate like Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan in a race for governor before. How does that influence all the down ballot races, and how will he influence the top of the ticket? I mean, I think Steve was pointing out, I think pretty smartly there at the end, that, you know, kind of the way the affordability issue is cutting right now, it's probably, you would think, going to hurt Republicans the most because they're the ones in power at the federal level. I mean, they can control the White House. They control Congress right now. You know, there's some risk, I think, for the GOP that voters will blame them if there isn't something changed here. But for Democrats, it's not all positive in Michigan. I mean, this does not necessarily mean Democrats are going to do great in Michigan next year, because you have some other dynamics at play. One being Mike Duggan, a former Democrat seeking to run as an independent for governor. He could very well take votes from whoever the Democratic nominee is and help the Republicans.
Yeah, we've
and then
heard
further down the ballot, you have a U.S. Senate race and a lot of other U.S. House races in key places with really competitive primary elections. That's not necessarily going to make it easier for Democrats in November.
No, I concur with you, but will people vote for Mike Duggan or Jocelyn Benson and then come back to the Democratic Party after they vote for governor? Because you see so many Democrats. Democrats by far take more of the straight party ballot voting than the Republicans do. So how does that play a role, Steve?
Well, what the Democrats are going to have to do is point out that you can vote a straight ticket at the same time voting for an independent an independent for governor. So people don't know that law, but in fact, that's the case. But I think that the real problem that they have is the governorship is the big enchilada in a midterm election. And in this case, you take a look at right now, the results we had John James actually leading Jocelyn Benson 37-31 with Mike Duggan at 18%. But even now, when voters don't know that Mike Duggan has been a lifelong Democrat, 16% of the Democrats are voting for Duggan, as opposed to only 10% of the Republicans. When voters find out that he is a Democrat, that he's supported Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Kamala Harris, Joe Biden, and Gretchen Whitmer, I suspect a number of those Democrats may decide they want to vote for him instead of Jocelyn Benson. They're certainly not going to want to vote for John James based on that.
Well, there's a rumor out there that Duggan reached out to Curtis Hertel, the Democratic chair of the party, and basically said, "Hey, let's talk, let's work some things out," and that phone call ended very quickly. But again, that's a rumor. Who am I to say what the Dems are actually doing? But so if you were to bet who's going to win the governorship in the U.S. Senate race in Michigan right now, Craig, who do you say?
I'm not going to make a bet. I'm sorry to let your listeners down.
Okay, we'll go to Steve. Steve, who do you say wins the governor's race and the U.S. Senate race, real quick?
Looking right now, if you look at the numbers, it would be the two Republicans, John James and Mike Rogers.
Steve, what if Perry Johnson gets in this race and throws in hundreds of millions of dollars? Does that change the dynamics?
No.
Okay, this is, you've heard it from the crystal ball of both Craig Mauger and Steve Mitchell. This is Rocky Rutschkowski sitting in for Paul W. Smith on Focus. Well, if you've been reading the newspaper or watching the news, there was a little bit of a headline that President Trump and the administration would let Nvidia export its H200 chip, which is an AI chip, to approved customers inside of China. And that export would be allowed if the U.S. were to get a 25% of the sales. So are we actually limiting the amount of information and technology that we're sharing with China, or are we doing it for a financial gain to pay off our national debt? Well, our next guest is a voice from deep inside America's national security conversation. He's someone who has seen the pressures of politics and the stakes up close. His name is Bob Carey. He's a dear friend of mine and executive director of National Defense Committee in Washington and a true Washington insider. He joins us today. He's a man who truly understands not only the battles abroad, but the battles fought every day in the halls of power. His perspective, I would have to say, is very sharp. His experience is deep, and he's got a passion for this country that's unmistakable, even though he did serve in the United States Navy. By the way, that's only my viewpoint, not the viewpoint of WJR. Bob, we're honored to have you on with us.
Hey, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Go Army, beat Navy. Yeah. I thought I'd start off with that.
You know what, dude? I'm going to bring up our bet now and in the future if you keep up with this. So,
well, we do have a bet going on this game coming up on Saturday, which is going to be a real bruiser. But I think the Army's got the Navy this year. Bob, talking a little bit about, notice how I kind of went straight into the question here. But Bob, talking about China, in your view, does China currently have a military edge in any domain? And if so, where?
Absolutely. I mean, the issue for the United States is that if we are going to have a conflict with China, it's going to be in China's backyard, not in ours. So we have to fight the war 3,000 miles away, whereas they're fighting it 20, 30 miles away. I take the Chinese at their word. They have been saying for the last 2 or 3 years, they will invade Taiwan in 2026 or 2027. I take them at their word. And I deeply worry that we're not prepared and have not been prepared for a while to be able to fight that type of war.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. And I got to ask, China has invested heavily in hypersonic weapons and naval expansion. And you are a naval captain, but a naval aviator. But they've expanded into their naval expansion dramatically and their cyber capabilities. Which of these do you believe poses the greatest challenge and the greatest threat to U.S. defense planning?
I think it's something much more low tech. It's drones. They have adopted drones the same way the Ukrainians have adopted drones in their defense against Russia. And they have, and drones are really revolutionizing warfare, whether they're big drones like the Reaper or whether they're small drones like the little ones that the Ukrainians are using to take out Russian armor. The fact of the matter is, I'm a firm believer that the only reason we still build manned military aircraft is because we give out flight jackets and we have developed a culture where people want to continue to be the aviator.
Yeah, Tom Cruise.
Yeah, exactly. But how much money can we save by taking the aviator out and filling up that area either with more range, more gas, or more weapons?
And in some cases, more accurate, because AI or an AI mechanism that would fly that drone, or having a drone have flown an aircraft or a drone being flown off of the continental United States in some base is much easier than it is to have a pilot flying missions, is it not?
I mean, there is always going to be the issue of how do you maintain communication with that drone? And you either have to really buttress your radio interface with the drone in order to be able to keep a man in the loop, or much more scarily, you got to let the drone go autonomous.
Well, listen, and when we get into that, let's also talk about the AI advantage, because you're in Washington, D.C. You see the National Defense Authorization Act, and you talk to the people in power in the halls of Congress. Two key AI provisions were left out of the final text of the NDAA, but yet we're hearing this news that the Trump administration is greenlighting NVIDIA to export these chips to authorized companies in China. Are you not afraid that some of these authorized companies will obviously, these chips will somehow end up in the non-authorized companies?
The Chinese Communist Party seems to be taking a line from Lenin of the capitalists will sell us the rope by which we will hang them. And for us to believe that there will be any type of control over those chips once they enter Chinese hands is naive to the extreme. And to seek to basically give our technological advantage to the Chinese for money seems pretty short-sighted in my view.
Well, I guess to sum it all up, are we looking at a numerical advantage or a technological advantage or something entirely completely different with China's growth as far as it concerns defense?
I want to answer yes to all of the above. I think that they may not have a technological advantage where we have a technological advantage. The question is that technological advantage that we currently possess still relevant in the age of drones and AI? And to the extent that AI can take over the man-in-the-loop capability of the drone aircraft or the drone ship or the drone missile, is really it starts to make this very scary. You know, even though I was a naval aviator, I'm starting to wonder if the day of the aircraft carrier is also numbered.
Really? You really feel that way?
It takes so much. I mean, of the 5,500 sailors that are on an aircraft carrier, only about 200 of them are actually aviators. All the rest is support. And you wonder whether that, if we could take those additional 4,800 sailors and put them in better use with drones and AI.
Captain Bob Carey, the Executive Director of National Defense Committee. Bob, where can people find out more information about National Defense Committee?
It's written like it's spelled. It's spelled like it sounds. www.nationaldefensecommittee.com. All one word.
Thanks for joining us. And again, go Army, beat Navy.
Whatever.
Thanks for joining us. This is Rocky Rutschkowski filling in for Paul W. Smith on WJR. That's great to fill in for Paul W. Smith. The first hour breezed right through. Like I mentioned in the first hour, we're joined with Krish Methrani, who's actually with me today. And Krish showed me a little news story about what's happening. And this totally blew my mind because I didn't even see this story yesterday. But Krish, it was a story about a St. Clair Shores resident, 20-year-old young man who posted on TikTok that he was going to do a mass shooting in a school.
Yeah, right here in St. Clair Shores.
Right here in Michigan, in St. Clair Shores, if we haven't gone through enough with the shootings in Oxford and all the things that we've seen that tear our hearts here in Michigan, this is the last thing we needed, especially during the holiday season.
it's great to see that, you know, the law enforcement jumped right on top of it and made sure that there's no room for jokes like this or anything. And these threats need to be taken seriously, you know. You don't know what's going to happen, and you better safe than sorry.
Absolutely. Now, from your perspective on using social media, do a lot of young people still use social media? And do they use predominantly TikTok and Instagram, or are they still with their parents on Facebook?
No, I mean, TikTok and Instagram are where our entire lives are built for young voters.
Really?
And that's what changes, you know, a person's personality. It's what changes the topic that they talk about. And you see people on it for 8, 9, 10 hours. And these are not just, you know, people who are teenagers, but even young children at the ages of 7, 8, or 9.
Wow. So should we as parents, are you telling us as parents to pay attention to TikTok and get on TikTok and kind of watch what our kids are doing?
100%. I mean, we've seen legislation trying to make sure that there's, you know, reduce cyberbullying, reduce sexual harassment via, you know, these types of social media outlets. But when we, you know, open up speech so much and open up free speech on social media, there's always the risk of young people being targeted and violated and, you know, they don't know what's going on, but on the other side of the screen, there could be someone trying to, you know, take control of them, misuse them, and create, you know, huge problems for them.
Well, I'm so happy that our local law enforcement, not just the FBI and others, but our local police departments are also watching all the social media and are really, I believe, have their finger on the pulse of the social media, correct?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. So, hey, about healthcare, are you and your generation, because you're 20 years old?
19.
Almost 20, right?
Mm-hmm.
So is your generation concerned about healthcare?
I mean, absolutely. We've seen how difficult it is at, you know, our age when we have to go through a certain process. So we can't even imagine, you know, once we get, you know, higher in age, how it could be. We have, you know, so many different issues in terms of affordability. When we hear politicians talk about affordability, it's not just, you know, the cost of everyday living. It comes to housing, and it comes to how the cost of healthcare, as you mentioned, and it comes to just the everyday lifestyle. It's impossible to live and thrive in this country right now. And we've seen policies that are helping, such as no taxes on tips, no taxes on overtime, and the huge tax cuts that the president just signed. But for us to really feel that impact, I mean, it's going to take some time.
Well, you know, I've heard, and by the way, Mike Parsons, remember about, I think it was about an hour ago, you said that I should be Krish's intern?
Yeah.
I think you're proving the point by just having Krish talk to me.
Yeah, let the man cook. He
yeah,
sounded
wow.
good.
Yeah, he's actually better than I am. I'm really nervous.
All right, Rakowski, you're out. Krish, you're in.
Yeah, fantastic. But, you know, we were talking about healthcare a little bit. You know, the House Republicans mm-hmm. are really struggling. And we're both, you know, I hope that this is not news to anybody, but I'm a conservative, and Krish is as well.
Absolutely.
And when you look at this, you know, this issue of Obamacare, the Dems created Obamacare in 2010, and now it takes government subsidies to the trillions of dollars to fund these health care increases, especially with the inflation that we've had. And now you're starting to see that Republicans are starting to shred themselves and separate in different basically on different healthcare plans.
And I, you know, I think President Trump's spot on about this, that we should stop giving money to these companies and instead give it to the American people who are paying these companies, you know, insane amounts. And this doesn't happen in most countries. I don't know why the United States is so special. And a big part of this can be the impacts of the healthcare companies and their money in politics.
Well, in Michigan, we've actually got an interesting proposal where the Speaker of the House, Matt Hall, laid out, you know, we have a Michigan Public Service Commission that watches rate hikes for our utilities, which I'm not sure if they're doing a great job or not.
Sure.
But I understand the investment that Detroit Edison and our DTE and Consumers Energy have to make sure that they're providing power. But he basically laid out, Matt Hall this is, laid out a proposal to have a type of Michigan Public Service Commission over health care and health spending of our hospitals.
I mean, I think that's fantastic. I appreciate Matt Hall's leadership on this because, you know, without oversight, these companies are going crazy. And it's the Michiganders and the everyday working class that are paying the bills and paying the cost for this.
But I lay this out to you and Mike. Where does the market control and where does government control? Should we truly have the government involved in everything? Because right now we're seeing a poll that just came out. I mean, literally an hour and a half ago that they're releasing a poll that says 41% of American citizens, especially the young, are saying that capitalism is unfavorable.
I mean, I think it depends on the industry. I mean, there are some industries where the government should stay completely out of it, but I don't know, with the rising care of medical attention and health care and all of that, maybe some intervention is necessary. And I'm actually surprised that this came from a Republican, because normally it's the Republicans who are kind of hands-off business.
Yeah, but you want to have hands-off to have the market control. And when you do that, you really have the price that people would pay instead of government-controlled payments.
Has that worked in healthcare, though, up to this point?
Yeah, I mean,
go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, I met this young couple in Sterling Heights a few days ago. They both had, you know, college degrees, working full-time. They're doing everything right, and that's a talent we want in Michigan. But the policies in Michigan aren't working for the young people. They're not working, and I think we need change, and that's what we're going to see in 2026.
Well, is it that we don't have enough restaurants, enough entertainment, enough education, enough employers that people are leaving Michigan?
Public transportation is a big thing, at least according to Dan Gilbert. He's been
okay. Yeah. You know what? I love Dan Gilbert, but this is just my viewpoint. I don't think it comes down to public transportation.
It's all really about affordability.
Affordability and economy and mm-hmm. entertainment and education and ability, opportunity. Are we providing our kids
spot on
opportunity? And if you provide opportunity, they will come.
Absolutely.
You don't need a commission to figure out how to increase Michigan's population. But you do. You know what we do need? We need to talk about car prices, because we're at the end of the year and people are looking for new cars and the car prices are just so expensive. Well, we've got Thad Zott coming into the studio to talk about how to negotiate car prices with sharks like him. This is Rocky Retchkovsky, sitting in for Paul W. Smith on the Focus Show at WJR. What great music. And it goes along with this bottle that I was just handed of Cabernet Sauvignon. Some great stuff. It beats the boxes I've been buying at the stores, the fine boxed wines. Well, it came from a dear friend who's in studio right now. And the man who lives at the crossroads of community innovation and pure automotive passion. It's our very own Thad Zott. He's here, and he's not just an auto dealer. He's a driving force in Michigan's car culture, a leader who understands what moves people just as well as what moves on four wheels. From family business roots to becoming a trusted voice in the automotive industry, Thad brings energy, insight, and heart to everything he does, and that's why we're so glad he's here. So, with the end of the year approaching, I thought we would go straight to the horse's mouth, Thad, and ask some important car questions to the man that owns Zott Auto and deals in the D, Thad Zott. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rocky. Rick, great to see you, and I appreciate you having me on.
Oh, great to have you in
studio,
too.
Happy holidays to everybody, right?
Yeah, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and Happy Hanukkah. I got to tell you that with the year ending, there are so many people in the car market, and they are getting sticker shockitis. I'm not sure if that's a real disease, but I got to tell you, I mean, new car prices are through the roof and used car prices are through the roof. Why?
Well, a lot of different things. I mean, supply and demand, I think a little bit of lower build from the manufacturers. You know, I think they took some of their production levels down, and that has, you know, transpired into the marketplace. And, you know, I think everything's gone up, right, Rocky? I mean, you look at any type of product. You were just talking about having dinner somewhere where it cost you a lot more than you thought it had.
Yeah, you got to mortgage a house these days.
Right, I know. So, yeah, everything's gone up, and you just got to make sure, you know, you do your homework.
Okay, so dealing with someone like you, give us the inside stories. If I want to buy a new car or a used car from a dealer like you, what do we do to get the best price? You can tell me.
Well, I would say do your homework, right? I think whether you're looking at new or used, everybody is an individual and has a little bit different situation in their household. and a little bit different use of that vehicle, you know, for their personal day-to-day driving. You know, do you drive a lot? Are you driving it for work? Are you in the car a lot? Are you do you need a truck? Do you need four-wheel drive? Do you need all-wheel drive? You know, are you looking at a certain payment? And making sure that you know, look at all costs of ownership. A lot of people are so focused on what's my payment, you know, what's the cost of driving that vehicle for the period you plan to have it? What's the gas fuel economy and how much does insurance cost? It's no totality. If you're purchasing the vehicle, you got to consider depreciation, which I think a lot of people overlook. That's really when you get into total cost of ownership. So, you know, it certainly is important upfront to find out, you know, do I have a vehicle that's really going to fit my budget? But you got to make sure you're looking at the big picture of things as well.
But how do we get the best price from people like you?
You know, I would say, you know, the first thing you do in this state is always consider leasing a vehicle. That's really where the best bang for the buck is, whether you're looking at new or used. Some people are hesitant of that. However, in our town, when I say our town, I'm talking about Metro Detroit. We're about 70% leasing penetration when it comes to people getting their new vehicle, not on used, but on new. So 7 out of 10 are leasing the vehicle because that's where the value is. You get the best bang for the buck. You don't have to worry about a lot of things I just said. You don't have to worry about depreciation. The great thing about leasing a vehicle is it's usually under warranty the whole time. So you don't have to worry about expensive service repairs down the road because you're covered under warranty. So it really is the, in my opinion, if I were looking at new vehicles, used vehicles, should I buy, should I lease? In this town and the way that our tax laws are set up in Michigan, they're very pro-leasing in Michigan. Some states, they are not. So leasing is very, very beneficial. If you can find, you know, someone that works at one of the manufacturers to help you get a discount, that's the best thing you can do. And everybody's connected somehow, some way to somebody in the car business. And
so that's really the secret sauce.
That is part of the secret sauce. I would say that's part of the secret sauce. And we're probably about 70% plan business, meaning they have some type of a plan, whether that's a supplier, a friends and family, a true employee discount. About 7 out of 10 of our vehicles are sold that way, which takes a lot of the negotiation headache out of the way. Where it gets a little bit more difficult on a new car side, I think, is there are many multiple layers of rebates. A lot of them are hidden, right? We have to dig for those. So you need to find a dealer that's going to dig for you and not be lazy. I mean, there's ways where you can go online and price a vehicle up on your own, and all of a sudden you get served up an extra $500 rebate. Or $1,000 rebate. We coach our customers to make sure they try to do that to see if they get any extra incentives that way.
Well, so, that's what I was looking for.
Right.
So, I mean, is there a secret handshake or a secret word?
No, you got to go to a trustworthy. You have to go to a trustworthy dealer. You know, go on Google and look at reviews and find out what kind of dealer you're dealing with. I think that speaks volumes. And then when you find the right dealer, make sure you push them to work for you. Make sure they're digging for those extra rebates because those are very, very impactful.
Chris, you have family in the automotive business.
Absolutely. We're a loyal GM family.
Yeah. Aren't I related to you?
Yeah, close enough.
You're my brother-in-law, aren't you? Ah, okay. Anyway.
Well, I mean, a lot of those, they can give them to anybody. You know, like these friends and families. You don't have to have a relationship. You know, you can just get one. Chrysler right now has six true family discounts they can give away to only family members, but one of those they can give to anybody because they have a special program going right now. You don't have to have a relationship.
So during the holiday season, this is the time to be joyful, merry, and make new friends, right? Just for the automotive discounts.
Work those friends that you know that are in the car business. It does help. I mean, it's huge. So at least that's the game on the new car side. I can certainly dive into the used car side if you guys want to talk about
that. Well, I want to talk about the used car side because you mentioned leasing. There is no such thing as leasing of used cars.
There is, but it when you actually...
High interest rates?
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense. The value isn't there. You know, yeah. The banks are very conservative when it comes to that. They don't like doing it, so they don't make it very attractive.
Okay, so I know you're going to hate this question, but let's say somebody's buying from a used car from a private seller.
Yes.
What do we look for in a used car when you're trying to buy it from a private seller?
I would be very careful. Very careful. I recommend not doing that.
You would only buy from Zod Automotive.
Well, of course. I mean, dealsindy.com. Yeah. You know, you can go check it out. But I always like dealing with a reputable dealer for lots of different reasons, right? They're not trying to hide something because they have a reputation to to worry about, right? We got to worry about Google. We have to worry about Facebook. We have to worry about social media. You know, an independent selling a car that maybe they just bought and they're trying to flip. You know, you got to be cautious with. So, you know, the new car franchise guys in particular do a really good job of going through the used vehicles as far as safety goes, upgrading those safeties. What do they need? New tires? What do they need? New brakes? What do they need? A new windshield? You know, professionally detailing it and selling a good quality product. You know, we're still competitive with the pricing out there in the market, and we've already done all these things where an independent seller may not do those exact same steps. So I recommend, you know, dealing with a new car franchise dealer. And I would say that, you know, if you're worried about getting a good deal, it's all up to you and making sure you do your homework. Everything is out there online.
We got 15 seconds.
Okay. I could go on for like another 2 hours on this topic.
I'm sure you could. You should host the show sometime. You're really good at that. And you're also watched by the Secretary of State and by the state industries,
correct.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, hey, if you want more information, where do people go?
For me, it's dealsinad.com. But I will say, if you are in the market, and I know we ran out of time, if you're in the market, the best showroom possible to go check out any vehicle you want is at the Detroit Auto Show, which is a month away.
Yeah.
It's the biggest showroom in the world.
I'm looking forward to seeing you on Charity Preview Night.
Let's do it.
Excellent.
We got some great entertainment. I'll tell you about later.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. You can tell me right quick.
All right, you ready?
Yeah.
Did you hear it?
No. Oh, darn. Come on, Thad. You could break it to the audience. But anyway, we'll
They're
probably
gonna
hear
like
it from Paul W. Smith. This is Rocky Rutschkowski sitting in for Paul W. Smith on Focus on WJR. At the top of the first hour, we actually talked with Ed Bombas, who was that social media phenomenon that kind of blew up. He's the 88-year-old that works at Myers and lost his pension through General Motors Corporation. Well, I had a chance to be very actively involved when I was in the legislature many, many moons ago with a group of Delphi employees. And our next guest has spent years fighting for fairness, clarity, and financial well-being of thousands of former Delphi employees, which is now Aptiv, who were affected by the automotive bankruptcies and the restructuring back in the early part of the century. And his name is Ron Bieber. He's no relation to the UAW or the AFL-CIO Bieber, but he's the treasurer of the Delphi Retiree Association and is a voice for steady leadership and unwavering dedication to his employees at the time when the retirees' issue can feel complex and deeply personal. Ron brings a purpose and a heart to the conversation because he really understands what's at stake and what all the retirees lost because he's lived it alongside the people that he represents. Ron, we're grateful to have you on WJR today.
Oh, Rocky, thanks very much for your interest, for sure.
Listen, Ron, I've got a little bit of a clip that I wanted to play, and this is President Trump talking about Delphi. This was almost 5 years ago in the 2020 election when he was first going up for re-election, and this is an issue that both Republicans and Democrats have supported, but we need to see more action about. Let me play the little clip before we get into it.
This week I signed an order to protect the pensions of workers at the Delphi Corporation. Does anybody know about that? These workers were taken advantage of very badly. When GM went bankrupt, Biden and Obama threw these workers to the wolves. Their pensions were totally wiped out. They were treated very unfairly. My order is the first step to restoring the pensions and health care benefits promised to workers in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Ohio. Because I will never let anyone rip off our great American workers. We're going to take care of our workers, and we should take care of our workers. So Delphi, is there anybody from Delphi here? I know I have your vote, but I'm not doing it for that reason. I'm doing it because what they did to you, look at that, it's quite a few people. What they did to you was very unfair.
And what they did to you really was very unfair, Ron.
Absolutely. You know, we were all covered by a pension plan that was traditionally well-funded and it was well-managed. There's data that has the report card on the pension plan for the previous 2 years. But because of the GM bankruptcy, because Delphi was the biggest supplier to GM at the time, and because GM was going through its own financial crisis, And because the Obama administration didn't want GM to collapse, and so they needed some resolution to Delphi's issues, we had our pension plan terminated by the PBGC, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, which is a part of the federal government. So, yeah, it's been a real slog for sure since that all happened in 2009.
Yeah, and the reason why we bring this up, I mentioned Ed Bombas and the story of how he got highlighted, but yet, you know, the world came up and through the social media phenomenon raised him $1.7 million to supplement the money that he lost in his pension and everything else. But there's how many employees are truly affected by the loss of their pensions, Ron, in the three states?
Well, in the three states, it would be 15,000. Across the country, it's about 20,000 salaried retirees who were covered by this pension plan. So that's part of our challenge, is that we're pretty heavy in Michigan, Ohio, and Indiana. And then you need the votes of other members of Congress in other states who don't have so many of us. And so that is our challenge, to get them to understand why it's important and to support it.
Yeah. So what are you asking us to do? Our brothers and sisters that are listening to this show today, what can we do to help you guys out?
Well, you know, we certainly appreciate the bipartisan support of Congress. The whole Michigan delegation is, supporting us in some way. The fact of the matter is, this is not a partisan statement. It's just a political fact that Republicans really control what happens in Washington. And so we all are looking to the Republicans to really get the bill passed, to be the leaders here. We note the clip that you have from President Trump, which was in 2006, and he did not get reelected, that whole election circumstance. And so what he had set out to do then ended when he left office, and that happened in 2010, I'm sorry. And so we had to start from scratch with a Democratic administration, and they pretty much said, oh, you got to go to Congress. And so now this is what we're doing, is we're going to Congress. But certainly, we want the support of both sides of the aisle, but the Republicans really control Congress, we're hoping they step up.
You know, the president just unveiled a $12 billion program to help farmers affected by the tariffs and so forth in the United States. How much money are we really talking about to make the retirees and those that were that lost their pensions under the bankruptcy of Delphi and General Motors, or that were affected by the General Motors bankruptcy? How much are we really talking about here to help supplement?
If you're restoring the full pensions, then the shortfall is $700 million or so that has to come up somewhere. And it can come up in terms of an offset within the what Congress does. You know, sometimes they spend more money and then save money someplace else. So that can be cost neutral to the deficit. Another way to pay it would have the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation pay that out of a huge surplus that they have. They predict it to be like $700 billion in 2035. So that's another way to do it. One way or the other, it can be done without any big impact, and it would right this wrong.
No, you're absolutely right, Ron. And most importantly, so that people realize, because they say, why is government getting involved in this? Government caused this, this restructuring, and they were the ones that wiped out the pensions in one respect or another by their actions. So thank you for being on the show today, Ron Bieber, treasurer for the Delphi Retiree Association. This is Rocky Rutschkowski sitting in for the legendary Paul W. Smith on The Focus Show on WJR. Well, 2 hours have just breezed by, and we're having a heat wave, a tropical heat wave. It was 25 when I first started, and now it's 27. It felt like 13, and now the weather feels like 17. If that's not a heat wave, I don't know what it is. I mean, I bring some positive energy to this show. Do I not, Mike?
It's a Christmas miracle.
It is. 2 degrees. And I promise it's only going to get warmer tonight.
Is it really? Are you snowing me?
No. It is.
Oh, it's great.
It's supposed to rain. And I'm here joined with Krish Methrani, who's joining us throughout the program as well.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. You know, one of the things that I wanted to really talk about before we ended was this controversy on football. We in the United States call it soccer. The rest of the world calls it football, but we already have a game called football. So President Trump chimed in when he was at the FIFA, the FIFA meeting? I guess the announcements?
The draw.
The draw.
Yes.
That's right. And this is what he said.
When you look at what has happened to football in the United States, again, soccer in the United States, we seem to never call it that because we have a little bit of a conflict with another thing that's called football. But when you think about it, shouldn't it really be called? I mean, this is football. There's no question about it. We have to come up with another name for the NFL stuff.
Yeah.
It really doesn't make sense when you think about it. It is really football.
Can you imagine the rebranding for the NFL?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, he's not wrong. I mean, I always thought calling it football didn't make a whole lot of sense. There's, you know, the foot and the ball come together very infrequently. But to your point, Rocky, I mean, the cat's out of the bag, the horse is out of the barn, whatever. It would be too big of a rebranding.
Wait a minute.
Endeavor.
Wait a minute. I'm still in shock. Are you saying that President Trump is right?
I agree with him on the name of this sport. It never made a whole lot of sense.
Mark down this time.
Yeah.
Nostradamus. Wow. Hey, Chris, how do you feel about this?
I think this is just Trump being Trump. You know, drop a comment, get everyone fighting. You know, he's dominating the headlines, and, you know, he's winning the game. I mean,
well, what would you change the name to?
I mean, I don't care what we change it to as long as it helps the Lions win. I mean,
you know, maybe it should have been called tackle ball or something at first. I don't know.
What about American rugby? The National American Rugby League.
No, you know what happened. We would call it rugby.
Gnarly.
You know, we would call it rugby, and then the rest of the world would call it American rugby. And then we'd call rugby something else.
Yeah, but we're taking it to England. You see all those teams that are playing in Europe right now, right?
Yeah.
And if we take it to Europe and we're taking it to England, what do they call it there?
American football.
I mean, I like it being different. I like us being special. We are always a little different when it comes to things.
We're not changing the name, and we're not switching to the metric system.
But you heard it here first. Wait a minute. Don't go there. The metric system is very easy.
Right.
It's all
what the hell
on
is
tens.
A kilometer?
Yeah. It's a kilometer is
1,000 meters.
Is 1,000 meters. Yeah, that's right. It's
prefer my miles.
1.62 than miles.
Yeah.
Hey, what about this story about Kristi Noem? You know, some are actually saying that she may be on the hot seat with the administration. And during the most recent cabinet meeting that we had, this is what she said about Somalis in Minnesota and Governor Waltz. By the way, listen very closely because she sure sounds Trump-esque.
You know, you told me to look into Minnesota and their fraud on visas and their programs. 50% of them are fraudulent, which means that wacko Governor Walls either is an idiot or he did it on purpose. And I think he's both, sir. He brought people in there illegally that never should have been in this country, said they were somebody that they're not. They said they were married to somebody who was their brother or somebody else. Fraudulent visa applications, signed up for government programs, took hundreds of billions of dollars from the taxpayers, and we're going to remove them and we're going to get our money back. And we're going to, this next year, make sure that we only put people in leadership positions in this country that love this country and have its back. So,
wow. So there's a lot to unpack there, and we've only got like 3 minutes. I don't even know where to start. All I can say is that Governor Waltz, you better watch your back because the feds are coming and they're investigating. And it's looking like there's some serious shady stuff that are going on in Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, to me, this looks like a systemic failure. You know, that's the way Kristi put it, it's a little more harsh. But this is it's a failure to protect the taxpayers, you know. And I've read reports where these people are sending the money back to Somalia. And there's, you know, terrorist-linked groups like Al-Shabaab that are...
I actually served there. And I actually worked with the groups that we fought against Al-Shabaab and the transnational terrorism that was in Somalia and the Horn of Africa. That was one of the areas that I actually served in. So you're absolutely right. And the money, the fraud that is just inherent in those groups. And now they're linking a Congresswoman, Ilhan Omar, to being involved with some of these groups, and she's being investigated. So she could be investigated by the DOJ, and she could also be investigated by the House Ethics Panel.
I mean, it's a disservice to Americans. I mean, these people are coming to this country, and without, you know, following the laws and respecting our system, they're, you know, creating chaos. I read a report where in 2018, there's $3 million of, you know, Medicare autism claims. And in 2023, it's $399 million. I mean, that just to me, it's a systemic failure. And we've allowed this. And Governor Walz has allowed this.
And in an era where we have computers and AI, where we should be watching where the money's going out and how the money's being spent, it's also our fault in the U.S. government to let this fraud just happen, right?
Yeah, and it's caused a national security issue. I mean, if these terrorist groups are getting this money, it's going to be used against us. We are the enemy to them. So we've got to put an end to this. It's a disservice to the average American taxpayer.
Well, if it's happening in Minnesota, where else is it happening as well? I mean, this might just be a can of worms that is yet to be opened.
Yeah, but we should be using every power in the toolbox of our government to find waste, fraud, and abuse.
Oh, absolutely.
After stopping it.
Yeah, and then once you're done investigating Minnesota, make sure everyone else is on the up and up as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Here in Michigan as well, across the board, because if we're not watching our own spending, we will continue to go out of, I mean, we are already out of control. We're almost approaching, what, $39 trillion? And when, at what point, are we going to get to a point where we will be able to handle our spending? Or will our country declare bankruptcy like the city of Detroit did? So it's a major problem and something that we'll look at. But you know what? It's been a pleasure, just a simple, absolute pleasure to sit in for the legendary Paul W. Smith. Paul will be back tomorrow. And guess what? Following us, you've got JR Afternoon with the always effervescent Ryan Armani. This is Rocky Rutschkowski and Krish Methrani joining us, as well as Mike Parsons, Danielle Mason, signing off, saying thank you very much. You've listened to The Focus Show on WJR.